Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:18 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 16th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today and look at Wall Street because we see an increasing number of reports that have concluded that we've seen the lows, that this corrective phase is over, that people are increasingly turning ever more bullish, and I thought that it would be instructive first to look at the chart. So look at the Dow Jones, for example. It had a very impressive counter trend rally, and the magnitude has been just over 2,000 points. Then you had the counter trend rally in October through to the first week of November, and it was just about more than 2,000 points. So what we can conclude is that this is a modestly larger rally than we saw then, but this trading activity that we've seen over the course of the last 12 months is out of character with the incredibly consistent advance that we saw in 2017. So, at the bare minimum, we can conclude that we had some acceleration at the end of 2017. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We had a failed upside break in September. Then we had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend again. Then we saw the index break down from the range that had prevailed for the balance of the year. And now we've seen the index rally back to test the lower side of the overhead trading range. So certainly it is encouraging that the market has gone through 24,000, but what has happened is that a short-term oversold condition has been replaced by a short-term overbought condition. So what we really need to see in order to return to a conclusion that this is a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term is a higher reaction low, and then subsequently a clear move to new recovery highs, and then a sustained move above the trend mean. So there is a shopping list of things that we need to see before we can reach any clear conclusions. Certainly, this rebound that we've had has been very encouraging. The rebound that we've seen, for example, in banks was the other thing that was really popping out in here today. The S&P 500 banks has got a very similar chart pattern. Now, it was up in a pretty robust fashion in here today, but we can clearly see that there has been a downward bias to trading for just about all of 2018. A very deep oversold condition was evident at the end of last year. That's being unwound, but it is coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. So this is an important area where we need to see that the advance can be sustained. Then we have what's going on in the UK. This is certainly headline grabbing, but the pound has been relatively quiet. UK gilts have been relatively quiet, and the stock market has been quiet. So what we can only conclude from that is that people are adopting a wait and see attitude. I think it's really quite likely that exit from the EU is going to be delayed, not least because there are just so many potential alternatives, and that it's going to take time to work through them all. But we can certainly see that people are neither panicked nor overly, I think, enthusiastic about jumping into the market. Now, I think the FTSE 250 is particularly interesting because, just like we've seen with Wall Street and with the banking sector, it is in the process of unwinding a short-term oversold condition. This is not the most consistent of charts, but we can say that on each of the previous occasions when it has pulled back violently, it has been able to regroup and then subsequently push back above the trend mean. So this is potentially one of those examples. But that is contingent on the global economy holding up, the outlook for UK domestic companies continuing to improve, and these are big questions at the current time. One thing that I think does really stand out is that when we look at US Treasuries, then they are continuing to unwind their overbought condition. So, in much the same way that the oversold condition in the stock market is being unwound, the overbought condition in the bond market is being unwound. But this was a meaningful rally. It broke the downtrend, and now the very big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move below that trend mean once more. In the eventuality that it doesn't, against a background where there is an incredible amount of additional supply due to come to the market, then we can anticipate that that would represent a rather significant headwind. Now, the other, I think, important point of outperformance that we're seeing in markets is in the emerging markets. The Brazilian market has done really very impressively. It was in additional positive territory in here today, and it continues to extend its move upwards to new all-time highs. There is no other market is quite capable of achieving that feat at the present moment. Then the Mexican peso continues to come back to test the dollar's sequence of higher reaction lows, and if it is going to fail, then we're likely to see that within the next week or two. But so far, the currency has been rallying since AMLO's accession to power. Now, when we look at what's going on in Asia, there are a number of countries have got elections this year. Indonesia is one of those, and the stock market continues to pull away from the region of the trend mean. Of course, India is another country that has got an election this year. The stock market today was somewhat just a little bit weaker, but generally quiet. But the banking sector continues to march ahead. Well, you'll remember a few weeks, oh, excuse me, months ago, then we had this very big pullback in some of the privately held Indian banks. And Yes Bank in here today was up in a rather robust fashion. So we're starting to see at least some evidence here that even those that were deeply oversold are starting to gather some attention. And that's against a background where you have the potential that the Modi government is going to attempt to buy the election. When we then look at some of the other countries that are going to have elections, well, the Philippines is due an election in 2019 as well, and the stock market has rebounded. It is back above the trend mean and has broken the sequence of lower rally highs that was evident for all of 2018. So this is looking rather positive. Now, the Philippine peso has been trending downwards for 5 years, but it is now stronger than the trend mean. This wouldn't be the first time that it has been able to rally above the trend mean, but the big question now will be whether it can hold this move. If it can, then that's likely to be a very, I think, important catalyst for foreign investors to become interested in the Philippines once more. When a currency goes from 40 to 54 in the space of 5 years, that has a rather deleterious effect on one's total return if you're investing from a foreigner's perspective. So any evidence that the peso's decline has been arrested would be, I think, really rather positive from the perspective of the market. When we look at what's going on in Malaysia, then there is this range that has been going on for 5 years already, and it's pretty much towards the lower side of the range. So we don't yet have clear evidence of a return to demand dominance there. Then the Thai market is just about steady in the region of the upper side of that underlying trading range, and it needs to push back above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. Well, having been up in a reasonably robust manner yesterday, the Chinese market was pretty much unchanged in here today. I think it is worth also keeping an eye on the banking sector. The banks, having had that, what I regarded as a manufactured advance between July and December, they've steadied again. Now they've been rallying for much of the last 3 weeks, but it's been a pretty modest advance so far. The fact that China is engaged in fiscal stimulus rather than becoming increasingly aggressive in terms of monetary stimulus, well, that's not especially great news for the banks. Then the big question is whether the issues that have been identified ad nauseum with the regional banking sector are going to be contained. What we did see in here today was that shadow banking lending has picked up somewhat, so that should be generally positive for the financial sector. Then, when we look at what's going on in terms of the H share market in Hong Kong, it's rallying back up towards the upper side of this range that's been underway now for 6 months. But the medium-term progression of lower rally highs is still intact, and it absolutely needs to break that sequence if we're to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So China is not the emerging market that is performing best, but it is likely to be the one that has got the greatest influence on other emerging markets for two big reasons. The first is that it is a destination for a significant number of exports from the smaller emerging markets, but it also occupies a very significant weighting in a number of the emerging market indices. Then you have the fact that the renminbi is the currency against which a substantial number of Asian central banks peg themselves. They don't want to see their currencies appreciating faster than the renminbi because that would erode their respective economies' competitiveness compared to China. And the renminbi today was in mildly stronger territory. It is pausing over the last four sessions in the region of the trend mean, and this is the I guess what one might call the decision point, because either it is now going to continue to weaken from here, or it is going to sustain a move above the trend mean. That alone would be a sign that there is potentially some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the trade war. So what happens with the renminbi from the current point, I think, is going to be well worth keeping an eye on. I thought it would also be worth highlighting some of the performances that we've seen in the industrial metals. And tin prices in particular have been rallying rather impressively over the course of the last few months, or excuse me, weeks, and are pushing back up towards the upper side of their range. Copper prices have been relatively steady, and they're not at least sustaining a move below that 260 cent level. When we look at the London Metals Index, it has been really quite weak because it's been led lower by aluminium prices, by zinc, and by lead. So aluminium remains in a clear downtrend. There was really quite incredible volatility back at the beginning of 2018, but it has so far pretty much failed to rally. So then when we look at the precious metals, palladium prices are accelerating on the upside. Now, we know that acceleration is a trend ending and that this advance cannot persist indefinitely. But so far, there isn't a great deal of evidence that it is over yet, and prices are at significant new all-time highs. So it is one thing to talk about palladium being more expensive than platinum, but palladium is currently more expensive than gold. So that is a very clear sign that there is a supply deficit, but the faster these prices appreciate, the greater the likelihood is that when it pulls back, it's going to do so in a very dynamic manner. And it would really require a clear Dahmer dynamic to signal that that is, I think, unfolding. Gold prices today were relatively quiet, and it's been edging up over the course of the last few sessions, but still below the $1,300 level. So far, this has been able to unwind at least part of the overbought condition, and as long as it is sustaining this move above the trend mean, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Silver prices have been rather quiet over the same period, but the most important thing it's done has been able to sustain this move above $15. So that is a return to demand dominance here, and it's a significant rally off the lower side of this evolving 3-year range. I think when we look at what exactly is going on out there in the wider markets, whether we look at the Nasdaq, the Dow, the S&P, or what's going on in Europe or in China, there is certainly a counter-trend rally going on right now, and this is occurring against a background where we've had a significant deterioration. Now, the awfully big question is, and we're likely to get an answer over the course of the next few weeks, is whether they can sustain moves above their respective trend means. This is by no means certain, and particularly following such an awfully big pullback, it would be really quite unusual not to see a retest of the lows. I think that is something that is quite likely over the course of the next few weeks, considering that now that the short-term oversold condition has been replaced by a short-term overbought condition. This, I think, is the biggest point. It's also worth considering that when we look at a share like Amazon, it is very clearly coming up towards the most recent of its lower rally highs. The definition of a downtrend is lower highs and lower lows, and we have ample evidence of that in Amazon. So as long as these lower highs remain intact, then that's likely to represent well, a supply dominant environment. And that's despite the fact that we've had an incredibly impressive rally, $400 rally in the space of approximately 3 weeks, is impressive by any margin. But now that it has unwound all of the oversold condition, the big question is, what's next? And the biggest arbiter of a return to demand dominance is going to be if Amazon can put in a higher reaction low. And so far, we just don't have that evidence. So it is just too early to make the determination that the lows are in. When we think about what the lead indicators for future recessions are, then the yield curve spread is around 18.5 basis points right now, so it is expanding. But the downtrend is still very much intact, and it would need to be sustaining a move above 30 basis points in order to really break that downtrend. And I think there's really very little prospect of that in the short term. When we think about the unemployment rate, then it's still nowhere near a point where it could be a problem. But the other point, of course, is that it's at record lows, and that's obviously going to coincide with the beginning of a recession, that you can't really have a recession without people losing their jobs. And the fact that we are at unemployment rates that haven't been seen since the late 1960s tells us that we're certainly late in this cycle. Then, when we go back and think about the stock market, well, the kinds of things that start to flash are at the beginning or as lead indicators for a recession are starting to look orange, if not red. That we have had different parts of the yield curve become inverted. We have got a rise in geopolitical tensions, and we have got the Federal Reserve reducing the size of its balance sheet. One of the first things we talk about at the chart seminar is that there are really only two things that are super important in markets. Everything else is noise. Well, the first is sentiment and the crowd, and we can monitor that with the charts. And the charts now are not as consistent as they were before. That tells us there's been a change in terms of the supply and demand. And the other is money flow. Because the one big difference between the big reactions that we saw in 2011 and 2014-15 was that monetary policy was still expanding, whereas today monetary policy is contracting, and the Fed reducing the size of its balance sheet by approximately 500 billion so far, and due to be almost 600 billion this year. That's a significant headwind. That's one of the inhibiting factors in the ability of the market to continue to advance from here and push on and sustain moves to new high ground. What we need to see is an additional source of new liquidity. Well, China cutting taxes is potentially one of those, but at the 300 billion that is likely to send into the economy is a fraction of, for example, what the quantitative easing program that the ECB embarked upon, putting 2.6 trillion euros into the economy over the course of a few years. That's the kind of liquidity infusion that can really move the needle, whereas China's tax cutting is, in by comparison, it's rather cosmetic. So I think that's a very important point to keep at the backs of our minds, that when we look at these trends that are no longer nearly as consistent as they were, then that has to tell us something about the interaction between supply and demand. Now, the dollar index has been positive for the last four of the last five sessions. It's bouncing from the region of the trend mean. I've seen a number of reports that say that being long dollars is the most crowded trade out there, that others are then saying that it is going to be a negative year for the dollar. But we just don't have much evidence of that just yet. The dollar index continues to bounce. There isn't a really solid argument for why the euro should be appreciating. That's despite the fact that Mario Draghi does not see a recession coming anytime soon, but that does not make the case for why Europe should be in any position to outperform. The relative valuation discount for Europe is probably a value trap, considering the challenges that remain outstanding. And when we look at European banks, well, the index was in positive territory in here today, and it was being led higher by Deutsche Bank, which was up 8%, and Commerzbank up 7 and or just under 7.5%. Well, the potential for a merger between the two is increasing, and Deutsche Bank is certainly looking a little oversold. But these are banks that are potentially going to merge, but that is a further reflection of the difficulties that are outstanding in the European banking sector. We continue to see these forced mergers between very weak institutions because Europe did not move to write off the bad loans. That's also a problem that Japan never really embraced, and their banking sector has been moribund for decades as a result. So the big question for Europe is, what are they going to do with all those bad debts? Eventually, they're going to have to get written down, but probably not until there is, I think, greater visibility on a united Europe. Everyone is talking about what's likely to happen with the UK and whether it will in fact be able to leave the EU, but nobody is talking about the clear federalist agenda that is being pursued by European technocrats. And that's a much bigger issue, that Europe is moving towards federalism, regardless of whether people want it or not. The fact that the UK is talking about leaving, has voted to leave, and may not be able to leave, those are parts of a bigger question about sovereignty and about self-determination of nations that is being largely brushed under the carpet by the political machinations that are going on around Brexit. So there are obviously some very big topics being pursued. Then, of course, we have the rise of populism, and that's a very big issue that is a direct influence from the attempt by social democratic institutions to inflate their debt load to make up for the fact that growth has in the ability of people to get good paying jobs that generate income, which can provide a stable standard of living, has largely been sacrificed by globalization. There's still an abiding thought that globalization was going to happen anyway, that it was only a matter of time before all those jobs were exported. But that's not necessarily the case. When we look at the kinds of economies that have industrialized and roboticized, I think really invested in automation, like South Korea, Japan, and Germany, and increasingly China, they've been able to hold on to their manufacturing. Whereas economies that did not embrace automation, like the UK or indeed the USA, have lost their manufacturing. And manufacturing is a very important part of any economy because those kinds of jobs generally pay better. So it is the primary way that uneducated people achieve a middle-class lifestyle. And it has essentially been excised from the economic fabric as a result of globalization. So that's still a big question that hasn't been answered. The rise of populism is something that is not going to be arrested until we have an answer to that question. Quite whether countries end up with left-wing populism or right-wing populism is going to be I think a function of their individual circumstances, but we are going to see continued rise of populist movements, I suspect. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.